You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to help you plan that unbelievable travel experience. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Welcome to First Bite, our Pride of Detroit midweek podcast. My name is Jeremy Reisman. I need to get used to this, editor-in-chief of Pride of Detroit. You can find me at Detroit Online on Twitter. With me, as always, is Ryan Matthews at Ryan underscore POD. Ryan, how are we doing today?
How is it only Wednesday?
The life of a school teacher right there.
That's right.
So if this is your first time listening to our midweek podcast, we like to bring in a special guest to talk to us about the Detroit Lions. We're back after a couple weeks off, and this week we have a very special guest, as always. Justin Rogers is with us from the Detroit News. Spent the past five, or I think you're almost at your five-year anniversary there. That seems kind of crazy at this point, no?
You're tracking it better than I am. I have no idea. They all blend together.
But Justin Rogers, you may remember him from his bromance days over at MLive with Kyle Meinke, now at the Detroit News, covering the Lions, I think about a decade over there. How you been doing, Justin?
I am surviving. I feel Ryan's pain that it's only Wednesday for me. It's only February. Like, it all seems to, at least you have the benefit of knowing what a weekend is.
Yeah, you know, it really reminds me of Billy Madison, you know, that opening scene where it's like, what day is it? And it's like, October. Yeah.
Quarantine for you. We brought Justin on this week because he put out a couple of really interesting articles, and he usually does. Let's be fair to him. This week, he kind of tackled Jared Goff in a couple different ways. And so we're going to start off with that. And then later in the podcast, we'll get his thoughts about Dan Campbell and some of the rest of the guys new in the Lions organization. But let's start with Jared Goff. And I want to start off just kind of with your general thoughts of what you think the Lions have in Jared Goff, because there's been a lot of talk about whether he's a bridge quarterback, whether he's for real, whether this means the Lions are going to draft someone or not draft someone at seven. What's your kind of overall thought on what the Lions are getting in Jared Goff, or what they think they're getting in Jared Goff?
Yeah, no, I think after watching the film, the bridge quarterback is the floor, I guess. You know, you brought him in so you have, you know, someone that's capable, someone that's talented, someone that's proven, but isn't necessarily someone locked into the job. You know, it is a prove it type situation for him. You know, there's a lot of things I saw in the film that I liked. There's some obvious real concerns about his game, and you know, maybe you can see some of the frustrations that Sean McVay had with him and led to this trade. But, you know, I feel intimately more knowledgeable about who he is and what his skill set is about after, you know, consuming those nine games.
Yeah. And, you know, if you haven't gone and check it out, you should definitely go take a look at it. That in-depth look that you took at Jared Goff was over, you know, the past few seasons. And, what's something, Justin, that you came away with after that deep dive that you weren't anticipating because of maybe just your cursory or your initial impressions of who Jared Goff was as kind of an outsider?
Yeah, you know, I thought of him, I think, as a pocket passer, you know, a guy that kind of stood in the pocket and delivered with accuracy. And that was true. What I didn't anticipate and something that really seems like it's developed in that scheme over the last maybe year and a half was how much they put him on the move. I mean, there were games where it felt like 70% of his pass attempts were designed rollouts. And, you know, some of that I think might've been by design with weaknesses, with pressure that I had noted, but he throws really, really well on the move. You know, it's weird. I had this like flashback to watching Mitch Trubisky in college and thinking like that was one of his strengths, was this guy that could roll out and throw on the move. And I thought was going to kind of be his defining skill set in the NFL. But whether it's right, whether it's left, across his body, like Goff has, you know, a good sense of timing and accuracy, even when he is moving, particularly those cross body throws, which you always think like in soccer, like you don't put the ball back across the middle. It's like something we've all heard, but he does it frequently and he does it with a great deal of success.
Kind of along the same lines, is there any misconceptions that you see out there from fans that they think, you think maybe they're getting wrong about Jared Goff?
You know, probably the check down or the short passing. I mean, we all saw the numbers. Like there was a pretty big drop off in how, what is it, average air yards per attempt last season was way down toward the league bottom. And, you know, my first reaction always is going to be like, what's going on with the quarterback mentally? Is he, you know, afraid? Is he checking down constantly? And it seemed like it was far more schematically driven. And again, that just might be a statement about what McVay felt about Goff, but, you know, he doesn't have a cannon. He doesn't have Matthew Stafford's arm. Nobody should pretend that he does, but he does have a really pretty deep ball in that 35-yard max range of where he can drop it in the bucket. And then they ran so many corner routes. And I think a corner routes is one of the more difficult routes for a quarterback to throw, because you're usually fitting into a window that's not only defined by the defenders, but also the sideline. And I would go as far as to say it's his favorite route. Like he really utilizes it well, has a good sense of anticipation and accuracy with those routes. So I don't think of him as a check down quarterback, other than, you know, maybe you're concerned in hiding him and his deficiencies against pressure.
And I think what was good about your article, Justin, too, is that you spent you looked at the past few seasons that Jared Goff has played quarterback for the Rams. And I think that there's this idea that his success was so predicated on Todd Gurley and the run game. And I don't think that can be understated. I think that obviously has something to do with it. But do you think that Jared Goff is going to be set up for success in Detroit with the run game as is in Detroit with Swift and, you know, maybe a little bit of carry on and whoever maybe the Lions might bring into that backfield? Or do you think that it's like so important that the Lions have a running game in order for Goff to be successful?
You know, it's a good question. And I look at first and foremost, just kind of the schematics of what the Rams do. They run so much play action. You know, I didn't look it up until after I was done and saw that he was top five in percentage each of the last 3 years. And to be honest, like when I saw 34%, like it felt low. Like I would have guessed, I would have safely guessed 50 just with how often they did it. And so, you know, I don't know what Anthony Lynn's plans are, if he's going to continue to you know, be so play action heavy. I think we all know that Swift is a very talented and capable and exciting back. You know, I don't know how much resources defenses are putting in the box to stop him right now. I guess you have to prove it over time, and you have to have that complement that can also do that damage. I always use the Saints as the example with Swift, because I think he's kind of a poor man's Kamara right now, or that's where you want him to be. So you need that Mark Ingram or that Latavius Murray to offset. But you know, I also wondered, like, with so much play action and play action under center too, Goff turned his back to the line of scrimmage a ton. You know, this isn't a inside handoff fake out of a shotgun where you can still keep your eyes on the defense and see what's going on. So, you know, I'm a little skeptical of my own analysis of his ability under pressure, because you're starting the clock at 1 second as opposed to 0 seconds when you're turning your back to the play like that so frequently, and the defense is expecting it.
That's good analysis. Let's just throw it out there. What's the likelihood that you think now that Goff is here that the Lions go quarterback at number seven? I know it's is it out of the question? Is it less likely now? What are your thoughts on that?
You know, a long time ago stopped speaking in black and white terms. And this it isn't true because it's a quick way of making yourself look stupid, right? Yeah. Like, you know, there are times when even when I know something and I'm hearing it from within the organization, and I still will couch it with the very, very likely. But I look at this situation, I look at the assets they paid, I listen to the words that Dan Campbell told me about how he wants to build a roster. And, you know, there didn't seem to be much ambiguity there in not wanting to force getting a quarterback. And mind you, this was the day, or the morning of Matthew Stafford being traded. So, you know, things might change, but I don't see it at seven. I think it's a bad use of resources. I don't know why you would draft a guy that would potentially sit for a season and a half or two seasons, you know, you're talking 40% now of that rookie contract, when clearly you look at the roster and it's far away. You know, maybe you can turn things around quickly and be competitive for a playoff spot in a year, but nobody's looking at this roster and saying they're a great offseason away from being a legit Super Bowl contender. And I think that's, to me, the bottom line in that discussion.
Yeah. And I think what also is important there too, Justin, you talk about bottom line, talk about Jared Goff's contract and the possibility of a restructure and what that could do to the Lions, both short term and long term. Do you think that it's something that the Lions should seriously consider? And do you think that they will?
You know, I keep looking at the math of the situation. And so, right. You know, I don't have the table in front of me right now, but you know, let's use a loose cap projection of $185 million, you know, and maybe it's plus or 5 million, but what we know right now with Goff coming in is Lions are over the cap, you know, and that's before free agency. That's before you got to squeeze in a number 7 overall draft pick. You got to factor in the whole idea eventually that you got to get a practice squad in there. Like, they've got to trim some serious cap space and probably in the ballpark of 20 million, maybe more. I don't know. You know, cause you do like to have that rainy day fund, and maybe that's just eliminated in a post pandemic dropped cap year that you just can't create that extra buffer space. But so you look at the options now of how do you create that space? And obviously there's several guys they could cut. They're going to need to replace them, but you can nickel and dime it with Justin Coleman, our Trufant, our Nick Williams. And, you know, those three alone, you cut those three and suddenly you've got somewhere in the ballpark of 15 million you created right there. But the other option teams always have is the contract restructure, the simple restructure. And, you know, it's very important that people understand this isn't a pay cut. This isn't Goff coming in and saying, I'm going to take less money. You're just giving the money up front and finding a way to spread that cap hit over. It's a super beneficial move for a player because, one, you get cash in hand. Two, it kind of adds some long-term security to your situation wherever you are. So, you know, just a rough estimate. I mean, it looks like they could pretty easily create 15, 16 million by restructuring Goff. And the only other real deal they can restructure and create not even that much space, but, you know, in that ballpark is Trey Flowers. And, you know, I think Goff is more likely. It doesn't really change the outlook too much. You know, I think with the way his cap situation is set up, he's clearly here for 2021. I mean, it's not even a discussion. I know some people have talked about flipping him right away after seeing what Carson Wentz brought. And that's just not the plan here. What it would do is probably lock him in a little bit more guaranteed to a job in year two. You know, instead of having, you know, 15 million guaranteed and 10 million dead money next year, it would, you know, the dead money would be near or above what his contract would be or his cap hit would be next year. So you're locking him in at 2022. It doesn't mean he's going to be the starter, but I think you reassess that situation after the 2021 season. You see what he produced on the field, whether there's optimism of him being the franchise guy going forth, or you go the Mahomes, Lamar Jackson, Jordan Love route. You draft the guy to sit behind him for that 2022 season, and maybe you make the move midseason, maybe you make it in 2023, but you're only eating 1 year of a rookie contract then as you're getting that development.
Yeah, and Anthony Lynn said specifically he'd like to see a rookie quarterback sit for a year, so that timeline makes a lot of sense. One thing before we head to our first break, You mentioned the team being up against the cap. What does that mean for free agency? What is a realistic goal for this team in free agency, given that they're so tight against the cap? Is it just like try to find a bunch of cheap 1-2 year deals that can just fill spots? Or can they kind of reach out and get a playmaker or two?
I know not many of us are going out to the store in the pandemic, but it's kind of like that DVD bargain bin at Walmart, right?
Yeah.
Where there's five for $20. And listen, there's some gems in there, right? Like you might be able to pull out a copy of Tommy Boy for $4. Like nobody's mad about getting a copy of Tommy Boy. I don't know anybody that has physical media anymore, but you get the gist of what I'm saying. I don't see them swinging for the fences. You know, I've got a pre-written offensive preview right now on free agency. I've kind of just started looking at the defensive side, and I guess I could see them maybe taking like one medium-sized swing for a culture guy. Like let's just pretend John Johnson gets mm-hmm. to free agency and they don't use the franchise tag. Like you're talking about a safety that's probably in that $10 million a year ballpark, but you could get a first year cap hit on a guy like that for $3-4 million, probably, you know, just the way you structure contracts in the NFL. Like that's the type of guy, like maybe I could see them take a young guy that can be a culture setter to one of the units. But the more likely option is a lot of bargains, a lot of, low cost veterans that can, get them through this 21 season without being, an embarrassment on the field, but also, kind of fitting that high effort, gritty cultural mode that they're trying to establish under Campbell.
Speaking of Campbell, we're going to talk to Justin about him just when we come back from the break, because Justin has talked to him one-on-one. So stick around on First Bite. We will be right back with Justin Rogers of the Detroit News.
Deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
And we are back with First Bite here with Justin Rogers of the Detroit News talking about Jared Goff at the top. Now we're going to get into Dan Campbell. Justin, I just want to kind of ask you a very, very basic question since you've had a one-on-one conversation with him, albeit over the phone or Zoom or whatever it was. What were your just kind of first impressions of the guy? I mean, we've been dealing with Matt Patricia for 3 years, and Dan Campbell certainly seems very different in a lot of ways. So what were your kind of first impressions just having that chat with him?
Yeah, Matt Patricia, the public-facing Matt Patricia and the behind-the-scenes Matt Patricia were two different guys, Campbell is more consistent, and really, Patricia was pretty easygoing and interesting when the cameras weren't rolling, but I wish I could remember who it was. At some point this offseason, they were talking about learning players' superpowers, like in the scouting process. And I don't know if this was an on-the-record or off-the-record conversation, so might be throwing out something that I'm not supposed to. But they were talking about scouting players and finding their superpower, right? And I watched Campbell, and clearly, like, the guy's superpower is charisma and conversation. Like, he's the guy that you get sat next to on a plane going cross-country, and you end up talking for 4 hours, and it's not annoying. It's genuine. It's, his enthusiasm and passion shine through. And during that one-on-one conversation, that's when I learned he was doing some of the like calls, like one-on-one Zoom calls with season ticket holders. And mm-hmm. like, that's to me, like, that's an awkward thing. Right. And yet, he's so perfect for it. He's so natural for dealing with people, and it's people of all walks of life. I mean, I really get the sense that he is authentic and genuine and just a good people person. And you know, that is to me his superpower here.
Was there anything that you came across with your conversation him that was maybe surprising to you, or maybe would surprise Lions fans, given, I mean, the whole meathead thing going around? Was there anything that maybe was counter to that?
You know, like, the meathead thing is so silly. Like, it, you can embrace it, but like, he also knows, like, it's not true. I think that's why he embraces it. Like,
yeah,
you can be a total meathead about football and still be smart and charismatic, and you know, you can be all of those things. I think probably the thing that surprised me the most is, as I'm kind of filtering through my list of questions and getting in as many as I possibly can in a half hour, because it's never enough time, right?
There, yeah.
Was sometimes how detailed he was on the record, and I think the one that really caught me off guard and was just so, I guess, helpful, was when I asked about, you know, the defensive scheme. And I really expected this nothing answer, because, you know, he had said so often during his introductory press conference, like, how, I guess, little he emphasized scheme, you know, and right, it was more about personnel. And so I thought I was expecting some kind of generic cliche answer. And no, he goes in, he starts dropping split safety and Saint coverage concepts and under 3-4 fronts. And I was like, what is happening right now? Like, it's, I'm trying to process it to ask follow-ups. And it was like such a information bomb that I wasn't expecting, that it caught me off guard, but it was nice. You know, like it gave me hope for going forward. Cause at the end of the day, like, when I ask a question, all I want is a good answer, because I'm asking the question, not for me, but for the fans. Like, that's my job, is to give fans good information to answer the questions they care about, you know, good or bad. And you know, when you ask that question, because so many people are asking, are they switching to the 3-4 or to the 4-3 or keeping the 3-4, like, it's not the most pressing thing of the offseason, but it was a question a lot of people were asking. I asked it and got a very meaningful response to answer that question for fans, and that's what I want to do in my job.
And, you know, correct me if I'm wrong, Justin, but it seems like Dan Campbell's the kind of guy that if he does have the time, that he would get into like any follow-up questions you might have about split safety this, or, you know, nose tackle that. Like, it seems like he's just a, like you said, a very genuine guy. So my follow-up to that, and, you know, I'm glad that you touched on, you know, the defense. What about the relationship do you think is going to be so beneficial between him and Aaron Glenn? Like, I mean, for me personally, I think the Aaron Glenn hire was something that really captured my attention and really set off like, hey, you know what? I'm a lot more comfortable with this hire now, of this guy with, you know, some head coaching experience, but that was kind of the concern. What about the Aaron Glenn hire interest? Like, what introduces that dynamic? What intrigues you about that?
Yeah, I didn't know a whole lot about Aaron Glenn, the, you know, beyond his playing days, maybe before, you know, kind of researching potential coordinators the days before that hire was made. Lost that article because Campbell got a itchy trigger finger before I could publish it. But you know, the first thing that stands out to you is you look at the numbers of that Saints secondary and how quickly they improved. You know, I remember there was a season where the Lions secondary was awful, like just awful in terms of like passer rating against. That's probably a lot of seasons, but
yeah, I was going to say this season.
somehow, like, the Saints were below them, and they might even been like the worst secondary in NFL history in terms of passer rating against at the time. And whatever, that's the era, but still, like, it stood out. And I think that was the year before Glenn came in. And they were, you know, a little shaky that first year, and then they just really took off. And yeah, they got some good pieces in there, but you can get good pieces and still not see success. And so when we talked to him for the first time, I don't, all the days blend together. It was last week, 2 weeks ago, I don't know. You could see why people peg him as a future head coach. Like, just the way he presents himself, the way he answers questions, the enthusiasm, the clearly the depth of knowledge. And, you know, I had asked Campbell just about all the former players he was adding to his staff, because that was another question like a lot of us were I wouldn't even deny like it wasn't a point of comedy at some point, right? Like it was like Patricia with the Syracuse guys, right? Like it just got to be like so over the top. But you know, he said these are guys that were super established in the league, and none more than Glenn, 15 years and all pro seasons and first round draft picks, who willingly went back to the bottom of the ladder because they loved it. And he said Aaron Glenn was the guy getting coffee and picking guys up from airports when he started it in New Orleans. And he worked his way up. And, you know, you have to believe that even if the Lions defense has a modicum of success, like a middle of the road unit in 2 years, like this guy might get poached.
Yeah. That's something that we talked about. And I think some Lions fans are already nervous about that sort of thing. But, you know, if that third round draft pick
to come back with it now, well, too.
There's that. And like when's the last time the Lions have had that problem that their coaching staff is so good that it's getting poached?
There was talk of it after like 2015, 14, you know, Terrell Austin and the early hype train with Jim Bob Cooter,
right, which right.
derailed and went off a bridge at some point.
Still have that shirt. Really quickly, want to go back to the defense, because based on your conversation with him, it sounds like he wants a defensive front like the Rams and a backfield like the Saints, which, okay, sure. Yeah, let's just have Aaron Donald and one of the best secondaries in the league. Is there more to it than that? Like schematically, what does that actually look like? Because it sounds easy to say, yeah, let me just have one of the best defensive fronts, one of the best secondaries.
I'm more interested in the secondary. You know, the Lions ran a ton of cover three and cover one, a lot of man coverage. It obviously became a talking point as people were frustrated and trying to figure out what could be done to fix that group. Now you're going to be looking at more cover two and quarters. And something I always go back to with the quarters defense, which has become increasingly popular in as the spread offensive concepts reach out. But every once in a while, like I'll ask a guy in like the locker room, like Mike Ford or Glover Quinn, like, what's your favorite coverage? And most cornerbacks will tell you man coverage. Like they want to be in man all day long. And Glover, who's one of the guys that I respect the most out of anybody I've ever covered because of how thoughtful his answers were. And he seemed really taken aback by the coverage question. And he thought about it. And I don't even think he got back to me immediately. I think he came back to me like a week later and he said, you know, I really love quarters. You know, and I'm thinking, okay, if one of the best free safeties, most instinctual safeties in the NFL likes quarters, there's got to be a reason for it. And I like the way it protects the deep ball. It doesn't put too much of a strain on the outside corners. It gives a nice bit of overlap and in coverage help. And yeah, you're going to need some better underneath defenders. Like, yeah. But, I like the idea of getting Tracy Walker back in a deep safety role. Now you're going to potentially have and likely have two on most plays. You know, arguably that's Will Harris's best role too, if he ever puts it together. Akuda, it's going to give him a little bit more or take a little bit off of his plate in terms of the stress that was put on him last season. So, that's the part I'm interested in the most. You know, the defensive front, yeah, you don't have Aaron Donald. And,
Thanks for reminding us.
Yeah. They had a chance at him. That's right. I mocked him to you guys. So I take 0% of the blame.
Justin did everything he could, man.
I tried. Martin just ignored my text. That's a once in a generational player. So like you're not going to find that guy, but they have to find some kind of interior pass rush, because it's not Nick Williams. It's not Danny Shelton. It's definitely not John Pennacini. Like it just, that's not a guy that's going to be setting up shop in the backfield. It like maybe the only guy in the roster you could say kind of has a little bit of that skill set is Deshaun Hand. And he's hurt. He's always hurt. You know, he's had major durability issues, no fault of his own, but that's just the reality of it. So they've got to find that interior presence because, you know, yeah, they need some edge rushing help too, but Trey Flowers. And if you can retain Okwara, like that's a decent amount of pressure you're going to get off the edge. You need to round it out with interior pressure. That's going to increase the sacks on the outside as well.
Yeah, no amount of John Pennacini penetration jokes will make him a good pass rush threat.
Totally checked it at the door.
You walked around it. I had to take it. Justin, we took more of your time than we allotted, so I appreciate you sticking around. Let me give you the floor to promote whatever you got, maybe tease some things coming up at the Detroit News, Twitter handle, all that fun stuff.
Oh, I don't do any of that stuff. if you don't know where I'm on Twitter now, then I'm sorry. Like, you probably shouldn't be on social media. Yeah, and I still work for the Detroit News, so you could probably find them too with Google. Google everything. Google
that'll work.
Yeah.
Justin, thanks again for joining us. I do appreciate you making some time out in finally some breaking in work for you, and hopefully you find some time to relax a little bit, as we're all trying to do. And I appreciate you for listening, everybody. Thank you for sticking around. We'll have our main POD cast on Monday night live here on Twitch and YouTube. But until then, it's chaos. Be kind.